This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Everybody, welcome to the Jeff Rubin Show. I am Jeff Rubin, joined today by two very special guests. One is Pat Castles. The other is my 4.5 month old son, Max. Say hello, Max. Max. He's microphone shy, but I assure you there is a baby here. Pat, back me up on this.
No, I can. That was actually me. I don't know how to use the microphone. Either, so it's, I can relate.
Max, you got anything you want to say in the mic? What do you think about Pixar movies? What's your favorite cartoon so far? We haven't watched any cartoons. We'll talk about that.
He has many thoughts on Mortal Kombat, though. Which,
yeah. Max, anything you want to say? All right, well, you know what? We'll get him.
Storming out in anger at this rinky-dink operation.
We will have to have him on, like, the game show episode or whatever the hell it is we do next week. All right, well, thank you for putting up with that, everyone. That was not a bit. That was my 4.5-month-old son, Max.
Yeah, a little shy. It's intimidating. He's here. He's with me. You know, I'm notoriously harsh with my co-stars. So, don't blame him.
So,
blame me.
Yeah, exactly. I apologize. So,
no, it looked very cute. I wish there was a video component to this podcast, but rest assured. I was hoping he would say something very trenchant.
The reason we had Max on the beginning of this episode is because this is a very special episode. Not only is it Max's first podcast appearance, but this is essentially the 10-year anniversary of the launch of the Jeff Rubin Show. The first episode I posted over July 4th in 2011. It's also, and this one I'm not as certain about because the episodes kind of come and go, and how you count them can get funny, but I believe this is episode 250 of this podcast as well.
Oh, that's kind of its own, that's a good coincidence. I remember when you started it, and I was like, podcasting, that won't last.
Right. No, so.
You wanted an investor, I said no, it was fine.
And I guess I want to do an episode just to let people know I'm still alive so I could hang out with Pat and also so I could plug...
Your baby? your new venture?
Yes.
Fatherhood?
My baby, liesgame.com.
Your true baby.
My true baby, which I've updated with more questions. I do want to quickly say liesgame.com is the game I launched last year kind of amidst the pandemic. It's a fun social game where you make up lies and try to fool your friends. I kind of rushed it out the door because there was like this moment for games that could be played on Zoom, but it was always envisioned actually as a game you would play like in person. And you can play it if your friends have phones. Everyone just takes out their phone, goes to liesgame.com, and it's pretty self-explanatory from there. You can use it as things start to, social interaction begins again. Things are still awkward. This is like a game you kind of always have in your pocket, and you can always play outside, inside. It's at a bar, waiting online for something. Liesgame.com.
It is very, it is very, very fun. And that's as someone who loves deceiving people. And I remember I played it. I played very many iterations of it, and I
beta tester.
Yeah, I remember. Was it whose wedding was it we played at the first version?
I think
really early.
Amir's, not Amir Blumenfeld, the other Amir.
Yeah, and it was very. That was obviously extremely early version. You had us in the middle of the ceremony. Actually, it was your speech. You asked us all to beta test your game, and it was very fun.
All right, that is everything I wanted to get out of the way. This is kind of a one-off episode, but I will be back later in the year with another kind of season of episodes. But this is a one-off. It's a movie review episode. It's our 10th movie review episode, and let me tell you what we're going to do. I have this list of movies. Pat and I looked in December 2019 at the movies that would be coming out in the summer of 2020. And we've made guesses about how those movies would do on Rotten Tomatoes. I am so sick of looking
clearly
at
just very clairvoyant about the coming year, not predicting everything except the most important thing that happened in that year.
So I'm sick of looking at this list, and now when I look at it, like half the movies came out months ago already. Like we're not going to sit here and talk about Wonder Woman 2.
Some probably not in the summer anymore. Even I'm sure.
Yeah,
there was
Wonder Woman 2 came out like on Christmas.
Yeah,
like I would have to go read the Wikipedia article for Wonder Woman 2 to remind myself what I didn't like about it. I think if I read the Wikipedia article, I'd be like, right, that was stupid. But like. 6 months later, like, I don't even know what to say about it anymore. So what we are going to do is we are going to kind of unceremoniously just bang through this list and just close it out. We owe it that much. There's some movies that still aren't out. We're just going to say whatever, and we're just going to finish this. Then what I actually would like to spend the bulk of our time doing is I went back and I listened, Pat, to the first 4 years. Look, I have a kid now. I'm very busy. I can't watch all these movies. I can't listen to all 9 episodes or whatever. So I listened to the first 4 years, and I listened to the episodes from 2011, 2012, 2013, 14.
It's like The Simpsons. Those are the best, you know, right. It really goes down. I get lazy. I start phoning it in by year 5 or 6. I'm like, I gave everything a 50% rating.
Mostly there's very little where someone's like, After Earth is going to be a hit. I stake my personal reputation on it. You know, like there's like nothing, but I did pull just 1 or 2 clips. And I also have some notes that I thought would be fun to go back and revisit. But first let's get through this list. Let's close out our list. So I'm going to open that up now.
I'm with you. It was a long year. I kind of want to move on from it in every meaningful way, including this. But I'm excited now are these going to be the rankings that we had too, or just did we do that, or we just kind of...
We guessed. Here's what we did.
Okay.
We, for each movie, one of us guessed what its score would be on Rotten Tomatoes, and the other guessed if it would be higher or lower.
Okay.
And
nice.
We have already
Thank you.
Covered the last time we caught up, like, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, or whatever it was. We caught up on Tenet. We caught up on Greyhound. We caught up on Scoob. And we caught up on Bill and Ted Face the Music. Here are the movies that were on our list that we registered guesses for that are not out yet that we are just going to have to not, you know, just, I don't know. They just don't count for anything, I guess. That's Jordan Peele's Candyman, Top Gun Maverick, Free Guy, Ghostbusters Afterlife, Jungle Cruise, and Morbius. Sorry, Morbius.
Well, you're the only person that would have Morbius be the kicker for that.
I'm going in chronological order, and Morbius was the last one to come out. But that means we still have 6 movies that were on the list that have since come out. I don't have a lot to say about a lot of these. I do think we're going to get through this quick. The first one, for instance, is Black Widow, which actually isn't out yet as Pat and I record this. It comes out on Friday. But there are enough reviews of it that there are a Rotten Tomatoes score. There is a Rotten Tomatoes score, so we can
see. This one I've seen probably most of the ones you're about to say, but not this one. So
yeah,
they're not all going to be this
By
this
the
blind.
Time you are listening... I have probably seen this movie, even though I have a baby, but... Yeah.
Well, it's on Disney Plus, so you can do...
That's true.
I think it's premium.
I'm going to the theater.
Good for you.
We worked it out, yeah. So...
we worked it out.
Yeah. So...
You're going to see it, and she's going to be angry.
This one, I guess this movie would receive an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. You guessed it would come in lower. Actual Black Widow, Rotten Tomatoes score. Neither of us have seen this movie yet. 82%.
And you guessed what?
You guessed it would be lower, so you get the point on that one.
Because you guessed 86?
I guessed 89, and you guessed lower, which is correct.
Oh, wow. It's funny. I thought I would have guessed higher because people love... I don't know. Marvel movies already are... Marvel, they come in at such a high level anyway. That'd be terrible for them to not get an okay review. And that one, it seemed like people love Black Widow, so oh well.
That one we're just going to sail past because, again, we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
By the time people are listening to this, there's already been, like, a controversy, the counter-controversy, like, the counter-counter-controversy, so, we're just living in this blissful world where none of that exists yet. The next movie that came out that we registered a guest for was what was at the time called Chris Rock's Untitled Saw Project.
Mm-hmm.
We now know it as Spiral from the Book of Saw, of course. This is a movie where I guessed it would get a 73% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And I said...
And you said it would be higher.
Wow, higher. I was so dark and gloomy. Low for Black Widow, high for the slasher film.
And it is a 36%.
Oh my God.
On Rotten Tomatoes, much lower. Point to me.
Point to you. By really a... Like I don't really know how to do these stats, but like that's so like that last one we were pretty close. You were close.
It's true.
I was way off.
Yeah,
I think you get. We both have 1 point, but yours is a little higher because I truly guessed way too high. I don't know why I thought that was gonna be so high.
I would have been way off if this was like some game where we were guessing how big these movies were gonna be, because I remember thinking like this was gonna be a big deal. Like Saw movies are really popular. Chris Rock's really popular. Like Chris Rock in a Saw movie seemed like a...
You know what it was? I think the reason I think I was so off is because at the time, even more so than other movies, it was such an enigma of what Chris Rock Saw was going to be. There was no description of it. There was no imagery for it. Like it was such an interesting pairing of, you know, it's this stand-up comedian making a rebooting of this ultra-violent franchise. I was like, what is that going to be like? And I mean, I haven't seen it, but I from what I've heard, it wasn't exactly like reinventing the wheel or anything.
I've never seen it, and I probably never will. You probably never will. It's as if it doesn't exist. It just,
well, I haven't seen like parts like two through whatever. I've only seen the first Saw.
At 36%, it's 12% lower than Scoob and has a good chance of being the lowest rated movie of the summer.
like someone watching Scoob and just being that angry about it.
Next is Fast 9. Pat guessed 67%.
What?
Which I wrote down next to this number. You made me write down only guessing because of the last two. I mean, I don't know.
Wait, Oh, I was guessing. Okay. I loved 7, but I must have meant that's what it got on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Okay. I was just playing the odds, I guess.
I don't know. This was before the pandemic. So anyway, it came in at 60%. You guessed 67%. I guessed lower, so that's a point for Jeff. We can spend a moment talking about Fast and Furious. There's a lot to chew on there, and I have a little more Fast and Furious stuff to catch up on the end, but let's take one moment here just to talk about Fast and the Furious 9, which I actually don't think we have, even though we both saw it.
No, it's great. I'm glad.
So here's my question for you on Fast and the Furious 9.
Yes.
What movie requires more knowledge about backstory and lore to appreciate? F9 or like any given Marvel movie? I think the Fast and the Furious movies have a more complicated backstory that requires more homework than any of the Marvel movies at this point. What do you think about that?
I think that the Avengers movies require a little bit more because that's taking every single element of all these movies, but the rest of them probably not. I think weirdly, like, I feel like even though the backstory is more convoluted of the Fast movies, I agree they have maybe more convoluted backstories. I don't agree that you need to see those movies more than you do the Marvel movies to see the newest Marvel movies. Like, I just think the Fast and the Furious movies, I think I saw it with someone, at least one person who didn't see all the old ones, and they were pretty, I don't know. I think you can enjoy them without, I mean, I think you're not going to know what the hell's going on, but also a car goes to space in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, but also they go to space in the Avengers, but like, this is not this is a universe where there aren't aliens, where physics are supposed to behave normally, where flight isn't, you know, humans can't fly, that kind of stuff.
Well, the space thing is the other thing I wanted to talk about, because the space thing, I feel like, is the biggest spoiler in the movie, and I guess we just spoiled it. But people are talking about it or whatever. Like, a character who was dead in a previous movie comes back, and that's in the trailer.
Yeah.
And like, that they beat the bad guy or whatever, of course. But that they go to space, I feel like, is the biggest surprise. It's kind of like the biggest...
Well, it's in the rocket car is in the trailer. It's just like...
Oh, is it? I missed.
Yeah, but it attaches from a plane. I mean, this is like how... the weird headspace I'm in. When I saw that, I'm like, we were literally like, no, they're probably just going to stay in the stratosphere. They're not going to go into orbit. Like, that would, for some reason in my head, a rocket car that just stays in like the stratosphere or the outer limits of Earth's atmosphere is in the realm of possibility, but the car going into orbit, not only does the car go into orbit, they crash it into a satellite. Which, if the movie Gravity is correct, that's going like 30,000 miles an hour or something insane like that, and they have that ridiculous like float into the international space. I mean, it just raises so many questions. I have a hot, I'm sorry, I'm getting on. This is a hot take. I love the Fast movies. I only guessed that low score because I was playing the odds, and that's what the RT scores were. And even 9 I kind of liked. But I think the going into space, I don't like it. I think it's a bridge too far.
Wow.
And I think what was so funny and fun about the rock kicking a missile into a submarine or jumping a car between two skyscrapers, which are almost as impossible as a car going to space in these contexts, it's like they're still just, you can imagine a screenwriter thinking that it's possible.
Right.
There's
right.
no way that whoever wrote the space, like, even if they didn't, they just see, you could imagine somebody, but the space thing. So I don't, it's not a very fun take, I admit. But plus also it just raises the question, like, maybe it's, I mean, where do they go next? Like,
it's true. I mean, I think it, I wonder if...
And I like the movie. I feel like a grump, but it comes from a place of love. I do think they have to like be careful with how they pace these things out.
I feel like at this point, I'm more invested in the Fast and the Furious franchise and the sum of the parts than I am in an individual movie. Like, I don't think the individual movies are great and I don't love them, but the whole franchise is such an unwieldy mess and such an unlikely story, and it's come so far. And like, yeah, I want to see like where they're pushing the franchise, like more than like any of the movies. Like, I want to see like... what their vision... I'm more interested in, like, what their vision for Fast and the Furious, like, as a brand is in this weird way.
And you know what I love about the space... No, I think...
And the space is kind of their answer to that. They're like, our vision is it's crazy. Another thing in that movie, by the way, is the car basically, like, has a makeshift grab. Like, I don't know how to... Like, the car swings like it's Tarzan, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Which is also... But
my favorite thing about
this, I like the cartoony stuff. I like this one more than the last one. Like, magnet car, cartoon. Like, I liked how cartoony it was, but I can appreciate.
The magnets, I feel like, are touching the. I get. Are approaching. I sound like an idiot because I'm like, well, magnet cars could happen. But my even though I have my issues with the space thing, one of my favorite things about the movie, and like the most Vin Diesel-y thing, is like they go to space. They go to orbit, which is like something only like a handful of people on the planet have done, and crash into a satellite. It's like something out of Star Wars. And that's not the climax. The climax is the Vin Diesel scene that happens. Yeah. Like, Vin Diesel is still like, you know, like, no. Them going to space, that's just the appetizer for Vin Diesel punching, you know, or running through a car or whatever.
All right, I'm going to circle back to Fast 9 as we look back on the previous episodes. So let's put it aside for now, and let's just finish this list. There's three more movies. One is Soul. I, again, have some more Pixar talk for later. I don't know what to say about Soul that, like, hasn't been said already. Like, I feel like it was, like, well covered 6 months ago or whatever.
Yeah,
it was good. We liked it. It's hard to guess with Pixar movies. Rotten Tomatoes, because they're all pretty strong. I guess...
Also, super unbelievable. I mean, I just didn't...
I guess Soul was going to get a 92%. Pat guessed higher, which is a tough one. That's a tough one.
I can't believe I guessed higher than you guessed, because you have such a high opinion of it.
I'm sorry. I guessed 96%. You... said higher.
What? Oh, wow. What the hell was I thinking?
You were off. It was 95. 95, off by one.
I just seem like it would be one of those things that that just gets a 99% because everyone decides it's like perfect.
I was nervous as I was looking now. Like, I figured it probably was above 96%, to be honest.
I just can't believe I would guess higher than you. I feel like you're the biggest Pixar fan.
Well, I guessed 96% and you guessed it would come in higher. We're going to talk about that Pixar fan I know thing. All right, let's talk about In the Heights, which I guessed would receive 92%. You guessed it would be lower. In the Heights, which did you watch?
I did watch it, yeah.
I watched the first 45 minutes. Nothing against the movie. It's just, again... the new lifestyle, and it was like, that's pretty good. I think I got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, 96%, and I guessed 92. You said lower. Another point for Jeff.
Wow.
But I got to say, I kind of cleaned up this year. We don't really need to go through belabor the results.
Yeah, I came in strong with that first victory, and then have you been running it since?
Yes. No, you got Fast 9. And then there's Wonder Woman 84, where I guessed it would come, I guessed it would come in at 80%, and you guessed it would come in higher. Wonder Woman 84 came in at 59%, meaning I got that one too. Pat, I got to tell you, I took all of them, including Tenet, Greyhound, and Scoob.
Jeez,
you took Black Widow. So I think I won this one. The worst movie was Saw, but I think this whole thing's a little bit off, and like, I don't mind if you never watched Project Saw or whatever.
But did I get it? I guess excluding Soul notwithstanding, because I got F9 right, do I get like a sort of a consolation prize for guessing right on the best movie on that list?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's right.
Good.
Yeah, I think you do get a consolation prize, and it is you get to move on to the rest of the episode, which I think will be... I can't believe I just like made people listen to this like work. I'm like, here's some joyless just paperwork we need to take care of before we can get to the part I'm actually excited about. So
you seem less excited about it than anyone. I think I was like, I don't see why it was a chore.
Oh, well, it's just because like I didn't really want to talk about.
No, I hear you. I hear you. And I think you're right. Like there's nothing new to say about even F9 at this point.
Totally. Yeah. So so Pat, I went back and I listened to, like I said, the first four podcasts. All right, let's talk about that now. Most of this is going to come in the form of me just like repeating things that one of us said, but I will play some clips at some point. And also, and I think this will be fun, I'm going to ask you, and I'll challenge myself as well, to make some predictions for 10 years out. We're going to make 10 years out predictions.
For movies, or for us, or for the world.
Oh, just for movies. That's okay. All I care about.
Thank God.
Yeah. So We're gonna look forward 10 years and try to make some predictions. But let me just tell you, so I listened to the 2011. It was episode 7 of this podcast. Pat there from the very beginning. Pat, what do you think your favorite movie of 2011 is? You're going to be very surprised when I tell you.
Oh, God, I'm embarrassed.
I looked.
I'm actually embarrassed. I don't know what it is, but it feels like I'm about to look at old photos of myself.
No, it's good. It's a good movie. I tried to, like, find a way to summarize it so I could give you a list and you could look at the list, but there wasn't really a good way to do
2011,
it.
2011. I mean, I'm going to guess it was something like... How big of a movie nerd? I mean, I was a movie nerd, but was I more into, like, arty movies? Or, like, now I'm becoming more... I mean, you're the dad here, but I'm becoming more, like... Like, F9 will probably be my favorite movie of the year. I wouldn't be shocked if it was. 2011. I don't remember what movies came out that year. It's really hard for me to guess.
I will just tell you the answer. Yeah, favorite movie of 2011 is Attack the Block.
Oh, that... Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is a good movie.
That... God. I'm not surprised. No, I think that... Because that actually kind of walks a nice line between, like, genre film that's entertaining as hell, but it's also like an exciting new director. Not new director, but an exciting director.
It was at the time, I think. It's, wasn't he? Joe Cornish? Is that right?
I think you're... Yeah. Totally. Yes, that's great. God, the young stars that were probably just like, you know, young men at this point.
But yeah. I saw that movie in great theaters. Movie. I also really liked it. I also think it's a great movie. And I've kind of low-key been meaning to rewatch it since, and I've just never gotten to it. I've only seen it that once. Have you ever seen it again?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know why.
It's only 90 minutes, too. I really got to get back to it.
I'm happy with that. That's not as embarrassing as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like something like Punch... No. Not Punch Drunk Love, but a Punch Drunk Love.
No, there's nothing
like
that embarrassing here. So another thing that happened in 2011 was we had just seen Planet of the Apes, and we're way into Rise of... Like, we're really into Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
That's the first of the last ones.
Right? I always get the names of the reboot trilogy mixed up because they're very confusing. But yes, the first James Franco Planet of the Apes, we were going absolutely nuts for.
We were. We weren't wrong. I mean, the next two are even better.
I predicted Andy Serkis would be formally recognized for some sort of motion capture performance.
Was he?
No, but not by
the Academy, certainly.
And I didn't mean for this movie specifically. I just meant like eventually he would be. That's what I thought was kind of interesting. He hasn't been. No one has been. Like, motion capture performances are still there. He's still kind of the king of them, I think.
You weren't wrong that it's been an ongoing. Although I kind of died down. It's a great question, but it seems like Andy Serkis is the only person whose work seems to raise the question, even. Like, yeah. I can't name the next biggest mocap actor.
It's true. It's still just him. And I guess I'm wondering, 10 years later, do you think, maybe this will be our first prediction, do you think in 10 years anyone will win an Oscar for some sort of motion capture special effect-y performance? And I want you to say, I predict that in 10 years, whatever it is, so I can pull it out. So in 10 years, I can pull that clip right out.
I predict in 10 years the Academy will... introduce a new award I think they're a little too stodgy to give it to digital performances even in the next 10 years. They're also, I feel like, it's not like there's that many of them. Like, I don't think... I think audiences kind of are not eager for seeing... If anything, I feel like people just complain about over reliance on CG these days. Although, to be fair, Cameron does have like 9 more Avatars coming out. I'm sure he's going to be pushing hard for those to get Oscars. So maybe. But I'm going to say no. I think no. Unfortunately. But I think it'd be great. I think stuntmen need... I think they need to have a stuntman category. That's the one. I didn't invent that campaign, but I think there will be a stuntman category in the next 10 years.
I also, in that episode, speaking of motion capture, was very into L.A. Noir. L.A. Noir had just come out, and I go on this big rant about how L.A. Noir is like this milestone game and how like that's going to be this turning point because like now they have actors in games and like the acting's a part of the gameplay. There's almost nothing like still like 10 years later, like no one has imitated L.A. Noir at all. It's like... Some people still like it or whatever, but it's like just an odd duck. Like,
I bet
still
the technology has been like used in other games, just not like in that. Just like, or
I'm
like
honestly
some...
not sure if it has. I mean, maybe, but like, I mean, games do have better motion
not
capture
like the,
performances
not the exact
now.
Same game. Yeah, like just some, probably just some of the same, like, I don't know. So I could be wrong. I don't know how video games work.
But I haven't seen a game where like that the acting is like part of the gameplay, except I'll shout out the full motion video game. What's it called? Her Story. Her Story like is a full motion game where you're actually watching a video and the acting comes into that. But it's a different thing because it's a full motion video. Anyway, let's move on to 2012. 2012, this year, Ben Rogers was with us. Ben Rogers, who now does the Action Boys podcast,
great
right?
podcast.
And so this is a fun year. At 20 minutes in, I don't know, this is from my notes. You guys don't need to know how far it is. But we were one thing is, well, I'll come back to that, I guess. One thing is, we're really excited for the Expendables 2. We were way up on Expendables 1.
Which we ultimately watched with Ben, or we watched one of them with Ben Rogers. I remember this distinctly. Sorry to cut you off.
But no, did we? Was it 2 or 3, you think?
It was the one. Was Ronda Rousey in one of them?
I don't remember. She might be in the third one. The third one has like some young
Expendables. So probably 3 then, yeah.
It was, so we were up on Expendables 1, and so optimistic for Expendables 2, which I think is like ultimately not a great movie or whatever.
I think we were satisfied with it.
I had an idea in that episode where I said they should get other expendable, like other types of expendables. Like they should get the lady expendables, and it's like Linda Hamilton and Michelle Yeoh, and they should get Kung Fu expendables and like all different like action subgenre expendables. That's a much better idea than what they actually did for Expendables. I was listening to it. I was like, good idea.
Has that
Jeff.
Happened in the last 9 years?
No, but no. It's fun listening like to old me give an idea that I've not thought about since I said it 9 years ago. I was like, that's a good idea. You know, I'm like legitimately impressed.
I think there's probably just in defiance of human biology, there was no, I was probably completely convinced that there would be an Expendables every year for the last 10 years, like forever. Like, I was probably, like, fully expecting there to be a 4, 5, 6, 7.
Well, I think 3 is the one, and we'll come to the year 3 came out, but I think 3 is the one that really killed it. So now I'm actually getting to the first clip I want to play, because, one moment, let me just cue this up. This is the year of not just John Carter, but also Battleship. Imagine a moment in time when there's two huge Taylor Kitsch movies coming out in the summer.
Was this 2013?
Yeah. I was very excited about
the summer of Kitsch.
I was so excited about John Carter. But that's not like, I think a lot of people were like, it was viewed as a disappointment because so many people were like so excited about it, you know? Like,
right, because it was Andrew Stanton.
But I was very up on how good John Carter was going to be. You prophetically, you know, you and your distrust of anything even vaguely steampunky. We're skeptical of it
from
the beginning.
I should, just to clarify, there is a history of me doing that. But specifically steampunk movies and show, how is The Nevers received? That's steampunky, right?
I think The Nevers was not received well, but only I haven't seen it.
The only good steampunk show ever made, Jack of All Trades with Bruce Campbell.
That's funny.
In syndication in the 90s.
There's also a lot of me talking about how much I love Joss Whedon in these episodes because of the Avengers and some other stuff. And I'm like talking about how great Joss Whedon is and how he never misses. And like, he's the greatest. And I'm like, it's like kind of not.
Yeah,
you know.
I said I actually didn't like Rise of the Apes. I just love James Franco.
Right. Yeah.
I repeatedly say that for some reason. It's weird.
So let me play this clip. We're talking about Taylor Kitsch, and who played Riggins in Friday Night Lights. We're talking about Battleship, and let me just play the clip. And the other voice you're going to hear is, like I said, it's Ben Rogers. So here it is. Oh, one moment. Ooh.
What if you dub my voice like, duh, I don't know nothing about movies.
We should have my son come on the 20-year anniversary one when he's 11, and he's just going to be like, this is stupid. I hate you guys. It was dub. We've been doing this for 20 years. All right, here's the clip. So Riggins, we're talking about, God, what's his real name?
Taylor Kitsch
from Friday Night Lights.
Let's just refer to him as Riggins.
Riggins.
So Riggins is the star. He is John Carter of Mars. And he's also the star of another movie coming out.
You just quoted the poster. Taylor Kitsch is John Carter of Mars.
But he's also the star of he's fronting another huge action movie with Liam Neeson, who we also talked about, Battleship. What do you guys think about Battleship? Keep in mind, this is from the company that brought you Transformers.
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea what it's about from the trailer. Like, I'm curious to see how they.
Do you think? Well, let's talk about Taylor Kitsch first. I think Taylor Kitsch is a viable, like, action movie star. I'm looking forward to see him do it.
I will say, yeah, he's quieter. He doesn't really have a tremendous. He's a brooding type. He's not like
mega hunk, mega
mega hunk. You know, he's not like The Rock. Where like The Rock, I'm surprised The Rock. I know he's really famous. He should be more famous.
I agree. I can't say enough good things about The Rock.
I
know I love The Rock. I'm on board with just about everything he does. I want to be his friend.
The Rock has not been in a good movie. And when Pat and I watched Doom, which we did for this bad video games movie show we did, and we watched Doom, and the movie's so, so bad. But when The Rock shows up, it's not as bad. And I think someone just needs to put The Rock in a decent movie. So, a few things there. First of all, Pat, skillfully identifying one, what would be the problem with Taylor Kitsch action star is that he's like brooding. He's like not like, that was, it was hard for him to translate. Yeah.
And that brooding is why True Detective season two was such a phenomenal success.
Also Pat, giving Battleship all the consideration it deserves. He's like, yeah, I don't know about this one. This seems like just like not even seriously considering Battleship, is all it deserves. That was so, I can't believe we do this stupid show where like I make you talk about Battleship. Like these things in retrospect.
You also cut me off because I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of sad because I was like, well, the thing I'm really curious about Battleship, and you're like, and then you, I mean, it's fine, but you interrupt me, and it's like, because we just, you know.
Now you'll never know.
But I'll never know. It's lost to time. What on earth could I possibly, like, what trenchant thought about that movie could I possibly have had? Yeah, I think the Taylor Kitsch thing is, yeah, I think we like him. I still like him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have anything against Taylor
Kitsch.
But,
like, they're not going to put him in front of an action movie anytime soon again. I could see him, like, I don't know, do some cable thing.
So Rock was not yet, it's so bizarre. So let's talk about that. Hear us talk about Rock not being in good mood, like, Rock not having found success in the film industry yet. It sounds like it's the year like 1981 or something.
So Rock,
it might as well be another dimension.
He had just done, I think that's the summer that Fast 6 is coming out. So let's talk about the Rock movie since then. G.I. Joe 2, Pain and Gain, Fast 6, Hercules, Fast 7, San Andreas, Central Intelligence, Moana, Baywatch, Jumanji, Fast 8, Rampage, Skyscraper, Hobbs and Shaw, Jumanji 2, Jungle Cruise. That's the past decade of The Rock. I would argue the only really good movies on this list are Fast 6, Fast 7, and I'll go throw Moana on this list. Moana is great, and The Rock is great in it, but like none of them are...
The Jumanji movies have a lot. There's two of them now.
Yeah.
So he's got two successful franchises. I think when he goes outside, he hasn't had... The sort of standalone ones, I think. Although I have a bit of an affinity for the one, what's the one in the tower?
Skyscraper.
Skyscraper, I kind of like. Just because it's like he jumps off a crane into a burning building and it's awesome. You're right. But it was right. So Fast 6, he is good in that. But I think Fast 7 is when it's like, wait, no, 6 is the first one. No, 5 is the first one he's in, right?
Yeah, looking... 5 is the first one he's in, and then he's in 6, 7, 8, and then he goes over, right?
Which one does he fight Vin Diesel in? Because I think that's when people fell in love. That's when he truly became a part of the franchise.
Maybe he's in 6 in the first. Maybe he might be the 6 might be his first one.
But it's true though. There are some like I mean I'm not.
This list makes me realize how important the Fast series is in like locking The Rock in as like you know America's most popular. I mean he became the highest paid actor somewhere over the past 10 years. I'm not sure where it happened, but like he became basically the number one. Like we were correct. Like he did deserve to be more famous than he got there.
Then he got any ball. Don't forget he's doing Ballers in there for like every summer or whatever for 5 or 6 years.
But I guess just looking at this list, like what strikes me is like none of the solo Rock vehicles, even Jumanji's like an ensemble piece. He's like kind of first among equals, but all the 4 of them are on the poster. But anyway, what strikes me is like there's still not a solo Rock vehicle that's like a great movie that anyone would call a great movie, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. Like not like maybe he just functions better. He's got such good, he's funny.
Yeah.
And he's got good chemistry.
Everyone still likes The Rock. Like,
he just fires off his co-stars so well that maybe that's just when he shines more than, you know, like, I don't know, like, I can't think of like an actor who's like just good. I mean, maybe, you know, Schwarzenegger doesn't really talk for his first few movies. So he can just like Terminator 1. You know, there's scenes where the Terminator is just looking in a mirror, cutting his face off, and it's like the coolest scene.
Yeah.
The Rock is more of a fun guy, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. So, prediction time, and maybe I'll take this one just so I don't put it all on you. Will The Rock make a great solo Rock vehicle in the next 10 years, or are we already post-peak Rock? Do you think we're already past post-peak Rock? I think... I'm going to say I've on this podcast often been mean about The Rock's movie choices, and I will continue that. I'm going to say no one's going to make like a Terminator with The Rock or an Edge of Tomorrow with The Rock or, you know, just like one of these like kind of unassailable classics that just holds up for years and years. No one's going to like no one.
Well, he also, it's weird. Unlike Schwarzenegger, or Willis even, he doesn't really do like hard R movies. Like,
yeah.
So that kind of, that, you know, I think you and I tend to love these like ultra violent,
but no one does
recall.
Hard R movies anymore except Keanu, you know?
So he's just like kind of playing in a different ballpark, even though he's amazing. I mean, it's possible, like, it seems like he's at the point, we might be past peak. This is so, I mean, we're going to like get so much hate mail for this or something, but maybe it's possible we're reaching the end of peak like action adventure rock, only because I think he might personally want to start doing more dramatic stuff.
Mm.
And you might want to laugh, but go ahead and laugh, because I think when he puts his mind to something, he's like Schwarzenegger. He has that weird athlete focus, like, I'm going to be governor of California. And he was governor of California. I'm going to be the biggest movie star in the world. Or Will Smith or whatever. Like, he's...
Someone in that episode makes a joke about The Rock running for president, which has, like, kind of become a meme thing, you know?
That's right. No, that he was made to talk about that on SNL.
So...
and John, I hope, thank, at least we didn't say Donald Trump will be president someday.
I'm going to move on now to 2013... Yeah, I stopped at like 2016. That feels like prehistory, like pre-2016, you know?
Yeah.
So one thing I noticed in listening to the episode from 2013 is just how many movies I said I will see and never saw, like Much Ado About Nothing. I'm like, I'm never going to see a Shakespeare movie, but this one I'm going to see. I've still never seen Much Ado About Nothing. Now You See Me, never saw it.
I saw that with David Young, I think. I think it was like one of the last before he moved to LA.
He loves magic, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he was not pleased.
What's the other one? Kick-Ass 2. I like Kick-Ass 1. Jim Carrey's in this one. I've still to this day never seen Kick-Ass 2. So it's just kind of funny listening to me be excited for movies. Something else I noticed in 2013 is so much TV. We were really living in this like golden era of TV. Like Breaking Bad was on. We're talking about Friday Night Lights. We're talking about The Wire. Like, we're talking about these things that I do not remember anymore. I'm like, oh, yeah, Landry's dad shows up in that one. And, like, listening to it 8 years later, I'm like, Landry's dad? Like, what the? Who played Landry's dad? And one point, you bring up the Battlestar prequel, not Caprica, the other Battlestar prequel.
Blood and Chrome.
Blood and Chrome. If you would have put me in a courtroom, I would have testified there was only one Battlestar Galactica prequel.
Do I praise Caprica? Because I think I had a...
You did like both Caprica and Blood and Chrome. You did like both of them.
I was like when Streeter was really defending John from Cincinnati for 6 months.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was my version of that. I was like, guys, no. Although I will say, even though the original Battlestar had this too, Caprica does have a lot of proto-Westworld themes and stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
But I'm really reaching at that. But guys, check it out, though.
There's just so many TV.
I would recommend it, but there's a full-on chance you just cannot get that series on any format.
There's like three people where we're like, that guy from the... We call them by their character name from The Wire. Like, we're just like really into... Like, it's just like...
No, you're right. All these shows were like happening. It kind of seems like a well... And right now it feels... I mean, there's so much good TV right now. It feels weird to say that. But in terms of like... None of the prestige dramas I watch are on right now.
No, it was better then. I mean, like Mad Men was on, yeah. Breaking Bad was on.
There's
like,
a lot of good TV now. It's
yeah,
just like,
but I think that was yeah, that
was a weird perfect storm.
It really was. And then the other thing I wanted to pull out from 2013 is some Pixar talk. So,
okay.
The first year we did this in 2011, Cars 2 had just come out. The next year, Brave came out. And in the 2013 episode, I almost pulled this clip, but it would just be me saying this one sentence where I'm like, how many bad movies does Pixar have to make in a row before I stop seeing Pixar movies? So let me do the same thing I did with The Rock and kind of pull out the past decade of Pixar movies. Because this was the pivot point, right? Like, Cars 2 is the end of their streak where, like, all their movies are, like, 10 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 at the worst, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So Cars 2 and then Brave and then Monster U, which was, like, a prequel. And we were talking about how, like, we don't like prequels and, like, there's no good prequels, which I think is still true.
Uh-huh.
And so here's the past. So that was, like, the turning point where, like, every Pixar movie stopped automatically being incredible. Here's what they did for the past 10 years. Cars 2, Brave, Monsters U, Inside Out, Good Dinosaur, Finding Dory, Cars 3, Coco, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4, Onward, Soul, and Luca. So looking at that list, there's a lot of sequels, and they're all fine. Even Cars 3 is fine. Cars 2 is no good. We don't need to get into that. We did it 10 years ago. But
I want every time you've complained about Cars 2 on this podcast.
Oh, I skipped the Green Lantern stuff, but there's obviously... The first year was the year we did Green Lantern, and
I remember us seeing that more than any podcast recording we've done, I swear to God.
We really railed on it, and it's funny, there's one point where I'm like, you know, all these movies want to be not the worst movie of the summer, and they all succeed at that, except for Green Lantern. That's right. Anyway, so I'm looking at this list of Pixar movies, and I think the sequels... Monsters U worked out to be fine. Cars 3, fine. Incredibles 2, fine. Toy Story 4, pretty good. Are all fine-ish. I think three of these are... Two, maybe three are really great. I think Inside Out's a Stone Cold classic. I think Coco's a Stone Cold classic. And I think Soul, I have to revisit, but I think you could probably make the argument if you wanted to. And so this is it. I haven't seen Luca yet. I think if it wasn't for the baby, I would have seen Luca. Because it is, like, literally for free. I could just turn it on and spend 90 minutes watching.
You saw Fast 9.
I know.
I don't know. Whatever. I don't know. I'm judging
well,
you.
Well, I had time that day, and I think Luca came out afterwards. But like,
right.
So there is now a Pixar. I will catch up with Luca. It's so frustrating. This came up when I want to watch The Mitchells versus The Machines as well, where, like, I want to watch a cartoon, and I'm like, I have a baby. Like, can't I watch the cartoon with the baby? Can't this be like,
yeah,
he's too young still. So, but it's like, it feels unfair that like I have a baby and like he still isn't, he can't just watch cartoons with me yet.
Right. What's the age?
I think two is like, maybe he can like start to look at it.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never had a kid before, but like,
when can he watch Spiral from the Book of Saw?
Three
or four?
We already did that.
We listen
to the audiobook. I play it for him every night, but yeah, it just feels like, it feels unfair to
me. He loves the puppet. He's like toy.
So I guess if you look at the original movies, then there's Brave, Inside Out, Good Dinosaur, Coco, Onward, Soul, Luca. If you look at just the original movies, their batting average is not bad.
I feel like the Good Dinosaur is like the lost Pixar movie, because didn't it come out like the same year? Like, for some reason they released two in one year.
There's something weird with the production of that one. It is bad. It's easily the worst non-Cars 2 movie on this list by a long shot.
But too, I think because of some production delays, it just happened to come out the same year as Inside Out or something, which
I think that's right.
So just completely overshadowed it. It's kind of like, if you told me that wasn't, it wasn't a Pixar movie, I might even believe you.
So here's the thing with Pixar movies is like, yeah, I still see them. I'm going to see Luca. Now that I have a child, I'm like certain I'll see the next 10 years of Pixar movies, right?
Yeah, it's great.
But the question...
That's the only reason you had one, right?
I guess what I realized exactly is that they're not events for me anymore. Like, it's not an event when a Pixar movie comes out. It's not like it's definitely like their prestige has been lowered in the past 10 years. And like, I don't get as excited as I used to for Pixar. You know?
Before the pandemic kind of made me rethink my priorities temporarily. Soul was kind of feeling like, not event-like, but for me an event, because it just seems so weird and interesting.
Yeah,
I got to figure out that. Which it was, ultimately, but I was like, but you're right, though, you're right. It's true.
So here is the prediction. I guess I don't really have a great question for Pixar. Like,
how many more Cars movies?
Yeah, first of all, do you think they'll make any sequels to any movies they haven't made any sequels to?
I think Toy Story will have another sequel.
You think there'll be another Toy Story? They're doing a Buzz Lightyear movie.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like Buzz Lightyear? Oh, set in space. Buzz Lightyear, right?
It's Buzz Lightyear Origins, where it's based on, quote-unquote, the real Buzz Lightyear, who
is
the toy
Tim
is
Allen
based
playing
on.
Buzz Lightyear?
No, Chris Evans is playing Buzz Lightyear.
Is it live action or animated?
I think it's animated, but
imagine it was live action?
That'd I'm honestly not sure. It might be. And it might be in a different style or something. Like, I get the sense they're trying to do something different.
I really hope it's called Buzz Lightyear : Origins. There's something so like dark about that.
So do you think you predict they will make a Toy Story 5?
Well, only because, without giving too much away, it ends in this very specific way.
I like how you spoiled the end of Fast 9 without thinking about it, but Toy Story 4, which came out two years ago.
Well, it's not a spoiler to say they would the end of the movie, I guess it is surprising they go to space, but that's the crazy thing about F9 is like them going to space is like not the crescendo of the film. It kind of is, but anyway. No, just Toy Story 4 ends in such a way that it's like very much like, and now Woody's off to many more adventures. You know, as a lost toy.
And what about toys?
So it just seems like and that could just be more like they didn't want it to end. Like, because 3, I love 3, but 3 doesn't. Like, in the kind of like beautiful way, but also like for a kid's movie, very like, it almost like, you know, and we go off into the West, like Frodo or something like that.
Yeah.
So they probably wanted to maybe give it more of a kid, like a more fun, like upbeat ending and less contemplative, which I think for you and I is like, oh, come on, let's make it artful and beautiful. But, you know, they're also just like, yeah, kids want to see Woody ride around on top of a race car.
I like Toy Story 4.
Anyway, so I think Toy Story 5 is definitely in the cards.
Okay.
Toy Story 5. I know that might be blasphemous to some people, but, you know.
Do you think they'll make a sequel to any movie they haven't made a sequel to? I was looking at it and I was like, you know, Coco 2? question mark?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I don't remember how Coco ends though.
Inside Out 2? Outside In, maybe, you know?
Yeah, uh-huh. Oh man, when with Riley.
Inside 2 does have a good setup for a sequel, which is Puberty.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's hard R movie.
Yeah. And I guess Coco ends with the family singing. I think Coco might be their best movie the past 10 years. I think Coco, like...
It did well, I assume, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it did, like, especially well. Like, I don't think it did, like, Dory numbers, but... Anyway.
That's a good one. That's a good guess. That'd be fun.
All right. Now, this is the last year I listened to, and it is 2014. This is the year we watched Transcendence immediately before recording.
The Johnny Depp movie?
That looks so delighted. Let me ask you, do you remember anything about the film Transcendence? Because we are talking about it nonstop in this episode. It's like the benchmark, like we're talking about the budget of it and using it as a benchmark for other movies. Like if Transcendence costs $100 million, Edge of Tomorrow must cost $1 billion.
No, I remember nothing about it. I know Johnny Depp's in it. I know it's about like... The singularity.
That's
and that
it.
Kind
it's
of
about
stuff.
The singularity. Yeah. I was curious if you would remember
also
that.
Also, proto, much like Caprica, a failed proto Westworld.
Armin, you talk about like Armin Zola, the Toby Huss character, showing up in the computer in Captain America 2 as a quote unquote transcendence like moment.
Toby Jones,
excuse me. Yeah. Anyway, you call it a transcendence like moment. Like just that, it's just like woven through that entire episode. They're just, I would not.
Oh, we talk about Captain America 2 or 3, and with that. And he's in the computer.
Yeah, and you're like, it's just like Transcendence.
Definitely the only time, I'm glad you have it preserved forever, the only time in history anyone has ever used the phrase Transcendence-like moment.
I did not remember Transcendence. I did remember Johnny Depp was in it. I did not remember it was about the singularity or anything else about it.
Were we excited about it? Like, were
no,
that excited about
we had
it?
Just watched it and it was bad. It's so, like, we can't remember anything about it. It's just here we are 7 years later or
amazing.
Whatever.
Amazing.
But that
is the kind of random movie. Like, remember when we watched, I don't know why you didn't talk about this, when you and I were super into Premium Rush?
Oh, yeah.
We like, but that's the opposite. That is a completely obscure...
I think we saw Premium Rush in theaters.
Yeah. That is kind of the
that's like
the
a diamond
corollary.
In the rough.
Yeah, that's the correlate of Transcendence, a movie that we loved, and I stand by and I think is great, but is completely, like, random and just mid-tier... Also, kind of movie they don't really make anymore, unless you're watching on, like, Tubi or something.
So, we're going to get back to that, too.
To Tubi?
Yeah, kind of. So, it's just interesting, like, what some of these movies, like, I'm hearing myself talk to you about them on the recording, and I have no recollection of them. And one of them is Expendables 3, which I guess we watched with Ben Rogers, I'm hearing. Do you remember, here's my question for you, do you remember who plays the villain in Expendables 3?
Seagal. No, not Seagal. Van Damme.
No, these are two.
Oh man, who's the villain? Give me a few seconds to guess. Three. Oh man,
it's Mel Gibson.
Oh, that's right.
I heard that on the recording. I heard me tell you that on recording, and it was like learning a new fact. Like I was
for some reason I thought they kind of went a different way than another like old timey action person for that third one.
Also, maybe the hardest I laughed in all the recordings I listened to is when you describe Antonio Banderas like backflipping and then showing up in that movie as quote unquote Frank Drebin like it's like the Naked Gun where like he does all the backflips and then clearly a different
yes.
actor stands
oh,
up.
Right. Like, yeah, he's like has a beard. That's a guy, like a white guy with a beard in one shot.
All right. So this year we did the thing where we talked about what movies we thought were most likely to be remembered. The movies I thought were
Can
most.
Can I just say one? Yeah. I don't know if this, just speaking of Ben Rogers, because I think we were watching, this is why I remember him watching it. I laughed so hard. We were just watching it and in silence together. And then, you know, Stallone is just at that point in his life, he was like getting older, but still like kind of jacked and extremely veiny and like, tan and just and he just just he was working on a tweet and he just showed me his phone and it just said Sylvester Stallone's Neck directed by David Cronenberg. Just completely caught me off
that guard. One really killed the Expendables franchise, which on this podcast at least we were very excited about.
Well, that because you know that's all they I do remember. I do remember part three. Oh, two other things I remember part three really quick. I guess yeah. I remember this movie more than Transcendence.
Yeah.
Stallone prominently featured. There's a Stallone's pen is prominently oh, yeah. featured. He has this like beautiful like handcrafted like red like or like jade and gold pen, and apparently like it's his own pen brand like deluxe pen. Pen brand or like a pen brand that he is like the chief spokesman for. I think you literally only see ads for this thing if you subscribe to like Cigar Aficionado or something like that.
It's like a fancy pen that Stallone sells under his name that he like makes a point of using in the movie.
Yes. and also that they try to set up like the new, there's like definitely like a right, new
there's,
team.
The young whippersnapper team that I think that Ronda Rousey's on, if yeah, she's
exactly,
in it at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another, also in that movie, you observe in that episode that the whole movie takes place either at a mission or on the way to the mission. Like the whole movie's like they're in the plane, like having yeah. conversations. Like the plane is the main setting for the right. film.
Was that, did I say that as a criticism? Because that actually sound, I actually... Today, me is like, yeah, that's a perfect action movie pacing.
No, because it's not actually movie. That, but it's just like, yeah, yeah, it, okay. it effectively is. So,
I guess I was more of a snob back then. Like,
let me talk
about some character building.
The movies we did think would be remembered. You good?
I just banged your table.
Oh, you're fine. It. The movies we did think would be remembered. I said Edge of Tomorrow and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Good guess.
You said Boyhood. And Planet of the Apes 2, whatever that is, Dawn of War, whatever the second one is. So the Planet of the Apes thing, one, we stand the Planet of the Apes franchise on this summer movie series. We just loved it.
Yeah, 2 is my favorite of the three, for sure.
I also love 2, and like it, we talk about in that episode, and this is why you thought it would be so remembered, as a special effects breakthrough where, like, again, like, the monkeys are real characters, and you, like, cry for the monkeys, and, like, you really believe in them, you know? So your argument there was more of a technical one.
Also, it technically has a shot of a ape riding a horse, firing not one but two assault rifles.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just something that movie rules. That's just something you don't see.
I'm surprised those movies. I wish those movies were more popular. I do really love those movies. I feel like the third one was less. The third one was. Yeah, it's true. The third one was so dour and sad, and like I feel like it really derailed them. I think people didn't go with that third one.
I thought 3 was cool. It's just that like. It was building like Lord of the Rings style to like this. I mean, it's called War. Isn't it called War for
War of
Planet of the Apes? Like, I was like an epic war battle, and it's really just a prison break movie.
Yeah,
like, and with one battle at the end, I think an avalanche comes and like knocks out half the people. So
yeah,
it just was not the. I think I was really expecting like the Return of the King or the Two Towers, but with apes.
It's also super Jesus-y. Like, there's a lot of, like, he's, like, literally right. on a crucifix and stuff. It's, like, it gets into, like, he's, like, this prophet for the
there's
apes.
There's a lot of great things about it.
So, but I wanted to zoom in on Boyhood for a second, because Boyhood, like, a very good guess for a movie that would be remembered. What a unique film, like, with this yeah. completely unreplicable process. And yet, I do feel like I haven't heard anyone talk about Boyhood in the past 5 or 6 years, and I was curious what you, why well, you thought
most,
that might be.
It's the most, of all the movies you mentioned so far, I mean, I that was clearly me. I mean, I really liked that movie when I saw it, and I still like it. I stand by it. I don't know why I thought it'd be remembered for so long. I was probably just trying to like get a little culture into this oafish podcast of yours, Jeff. I apologize that I didn't pick Guardians of the Galaxy.
They do that. We're gonna get a clip of you doing that in a minute. But
now I'm really embarrassed.
But Boyhood was there was a lot of hype for it that year. I think what won the Oscar in 2014.
Well, just what he did is incredible. He shot it for 10 years.
I know, but there was like, I we were talking, like it was a shoe-in for the Oscar. I'm curious what beat it. Like, I wonder if it won.
I know it beat it because Birdman. Oh, yeah.
That
also not super remembered.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
director's great, of course. That director's gone on to make
that's
awesome
true.
Stuff.
But
I mean, he was already making awesome stuff. But
yeah, so I think I guess the other problem I put forward for that movie is I think it's like 3 hours long or three.
Yeah, I mean,
long
I don't know why I thought. I guess I thought it'd be remembered.
I think it's a good guess. Like I don't think you don't have to work hard to figure out why you would think it would be remembered. It's such a remarkable.
And Linklater has made like you know, he makes movies that are not. He makes movies that stand that become cultural touchstones forever, like Dazed and Confused, like Slacker. You know what I mean? These are like movies that, like, Dazed and Confused is still. They just wrote a book was just published about it, the making of it, and you know it's like still this iconic film, like you know, like American Graffiti or whatever. So it just seemed like he was, you know, he's someone that seems to have a good ear for that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how much of this is simply that like Boyhood was never on Netflix, and like if Boyhood was on Netflix, like it would still be something people like.
Yeah, maybe,
you know, it's
maybe.
Just like the way that like It's a Wonderful Life like was not that popular until like it was just on cable every year, and then like it became a classic. Like I wonder if it just didn't get enough exposure. And
I was probably just smitten with it too, to be frank. Like, and you know, and I just figured like everyone must see why this movie is so great, which is can be super irritating as this clip you're about to play may or may
not
demonstrate. But at the same time, you know, that's what's fun about movies. Like, I'm not dead inside, or I wasn't then. I am now, but at the time, I was. I still, my soul hadn't been crushed by 4 years of reality.
So I have two more topics I want to cover here. The first one's Marvel. We haven't really talked much about Marvel, and like they're kind of the dominant thing of the past decade of summer movies, you know? Like it's kind of like Avengers. I mean, we actually started this in 2011, pre-Avengers, you know? Like this is, and I think Avengers is probably like the most influential movie of the past 10 years, commercially speaking, you know? And so I did want to pause for a moment and just talk about like the past 10 years of Marvel. And I do think this summer, like listening to us talk about it, I actually am not super excited about Captain America 1 in the 2011 episode. I'm a little soft on Captain America. And I feel like Avengers, obviously, we're quite excited about. But this is the summer where I feel like they really locked it in with the Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America 2, 1-2 punch. Captain America 2 came out in April, and then Guardians came out in August. And those are, I think, still maybe two of the best movies. Captain America 2 kind of like doing this familiar thing. Guardians of the Galaxy was like this really original, you know. And
yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're kind of doing the two ends of the spectrum. Like one is like one's like it's about the original character. It takes it very seriously. And what are the political implications of being Captain America? That too kind of has all that stuff going on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy gets tortured in it, for Christ's sake. And then Guardians, of course, is probably arguably the—I don't mean this negatively—the silliest of the movies.
One, yes, that's right. This is the point where, like, I feel like after this, I was going to see every Marvel movie automatically. Like, I saw them all before this, but this is the point where, like, I think
You were also already, and the guy who made Guardians of the Galaxy, what's his face?
James Gunn. Yeah, I was always into Slither.
You were ahead of the curve. You had James Gunn stack before it was cool.
It's true. It's true. So. Here's my question. In 2012, when we were recording, we called Avengers the pinnacle of the Marvel series, which is funny because like since then they've done, I think, Infinity and Endgame, you would call the pinnacle now. So here's my question. And whose turn is it? Is it mine or yours?
I don't remember. I think it's yours.
All right. So first of all, in 10 years, will Avengers Endgame / Infinity War still be seen as the pinnacle of the Marvel series? Like, will they be able to top that? I predict they will not. What do you think?
I don't know. Will you tell? You have your thumb a little more. You're more attuned to this universe, and I kind of want to get your read on it.
I don't know why I think that. I mean, I love Infinity War and I love Endgame, and like everything just came together, and like I guess it's gonna be hard to do now that people are leaving the series. You know, people are just like coming and going, and like. Yeah. They won't, I don't know, the first time, I don't know, I'm worried that, I guess I'm, it's hard to imagine they're going
to... I feel like in order to top it, I could see it like, because if they're introducing all these new characters, are they just going to give this whole new class their own Infinity War type crescendo that rivals the Infinity War, or are they going to try and... Yes, if they surpass it, then I think they're going to have to like bring in all the old characters, and it seems like... It almost feels like the reason Infinity War is so good is because it's using the momentum of all the movies before it, like you know, all the characters, all the wars, all the armies, all these different things, all the you know cutaway, all the post credit scenes and the Infinity Stones. Then they all of that builds to that one final film, which is incredible and it's a pinnacle. It feels like the new movies, this new phase, isn't really doing that. It feels like they kind of hit a reset button a little bit, right? Yeah. Even though some of the characters are still around, and I'm sure like there'll be a scene where like, you know, I don't know. I mean, it'll be pretty cool if like Kumail meets like Thor. I'm looking forward to that scene sure.
It'll probably happen.
But they have to use that momentum if they want to make it bigger, which maybe that's the whole plan. I don't know.
They seem patient.
It seems possible. Maybe not in 10 years, but it seems like maybe something crazy will happen.
Well, I have a few other Marvel questions. Do you think there will be a Marvel movie that outright bombs? Like, do you think they'll release one that's just like a dud, which they have not done? Like at this point, like,
oh, wow.
I don't know what the least successful one is. Maybe like Ant-Man. Ant-Man made, you know, they're making 3 Ant-Man movies.
Wow, it seems impossible. Like, not impossible.
10 years.
I know. I wonder if that was the closest they ever came, or if they've even composed. Like,
I don't know. Maybe, like, those first few, like, I don't know if the first Captain America or the first Thor was especially big.
I don't know. Maybe if they do one, like, where... Maybe if they just get like really too, maybe they just get like way too big for their britches and just like try and like, and they just wanted like, let's just try like, I don't know, like maybe Captain America teams up with Hitler. Like, let's, and they're just they're like, we haven't made a mistake yet. We can do no wrong. And then people are like, I could see them just really putting all their eggs in a totally misguided basket like that. You know what I mean?
Well, the
but it's more likely, I think I could just see a slower decline, like, for a little while. Like, well, that seems more likely. People just kind of get bored with them, which I know maybe sounds insane, but I don't know.
What I could imagine them doing, and I imagine they'll have to do at some point. I don't know if it'll be in 10 years, but I think in 20 years. They got to you reboot the timeline. Just like, that's how they do it in comic books. Because, like, you got to have,
they're already kind of doing that a little bit. Or they're already tampering with timelines. That seems of course.
But do you think, like, someone else, like a new Iron Man, a new Captain America, you know, like a new, like new actors playing them. Like,
I mean, I don't read, I haven't read as many comic books as you have, so I don't really know exactly the ins and outs of the timeline. But I think certainly, like, I think they kind of like.
Well, I guess I'm proposing.
We already have multiple. The next Spider-Man, I think, is going to be playing with alternate timelines.
That's true.
Alternate Spider-Man.
I'm saying that they're going to have to do it in a way they don't do it for comics because. I mean, comics, Steve Rogers comes and goes, and sometimes he is Captain America, sometimes he isn't, but he usually is, and, like, he always will be in some way. But, like, Chris Evans, I mean, maybe they'll get him back at some point for, like, here or there or something, but, like, he seems pretty done with playing Captain America. So, like, they'll have to do something that isn't in the comics, which is, I guess, restart just to kind of get fresh blood in there. I don't know.
I think it seems, yeah, I mean, it seems like, I mean, again, it feels like they've that, you know, part of the success of the MCU is that it's done by people who live and breathe and know the comics so well, and not all the time. They, you know, these are movies, not comics. But in all these ways that matter, it seems like they're taking their cues from the history of the comic books, whether it's what stories they pick or having a new character take the mantle of a former hero, like with the Falcon becoming the new Captain America or whatever. Right. So rebooting the timeline just feels like another potential arsenal in the toolbox. I hope they don't do it soon. I love all these people in these movies. But
I'm going to predict that there will not be a Marvel movie that bombs unless, like, Kevin Feige leaves. Like, it's like the SNL season without Lorne Michaels. Or they reboot the universe. And there's, like, just like, I don't know, some new...
Kevin Feige?
Feige? I don't know.
Kevin Feige department. Yes, actually. And they get Gene Dominane or whatever.
I'm not saying, like, he is the key. I'm just saying, in this current Marvel machine, I don't think there's going to be a bomb. But at some point, the machine will change pieces, and then it will become feasible. But, like, the current thing, it's just so... It's crazy to say, but it's just so hard to imagine.
But, yeah.
Maybe if they do... I guess I could see if they do, like, a Titanic. They're like, guys, we're spending 10 times more than has ever been spent on a movie. Right. And, like, they make, like, a Cleopatra, like... Just something that's, like, too big to fail. I can see people being like, you guys have gone too far. I don't even know what that looks like because I think they already did it and it worked, but maybe something like that.
Yeah, there's... I mean, I would say... I could see the quality of one being, like, shockingly bad. Because also, I mean, they're known for, like, relative to blockbusters, like, taking risks. Like, I remember there was a time when, like, Guardians came out. People were like... There was a small group of people who were like, what is this? It's like, I've never... No one... Unlike Thor or Captain America, people were like... I've never heard of these characters.
Right.
There's a raccoon in it. This is, even by Marvel standards, this is, like, too silly, too ridiculous, too obscure. And then, of course, you know, it did well. So that said, it was great. Taking risks is one of the coolest and most exciting things and probably helped keep the series fresh. But the flip side of that is, you know, they're risks because they could fail.
That's the other reason Guardian specifically was such a turning point for them, because that is the first one that hit... That wasn't a character that was a household name. And as much as Thor, I think Thor is a household name. I think Captain America is a household name. If you don't know Steve Rogers or whatever. But that was the first one where it was like a fairly obscure character. And it was like one of the biggest hits for them yet. And they were like, oh, shit.
I'll tell you this. If a Marvel movie flops, you know he's going to have a couple of jokes about that. Deadpool. You know he's going to have some meta jokes.
I feel like Guardians
of the Galaxy. Nothing gets by Deadpool.
I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy hit and they were like, oh, shit. We can do anything. We might even be able to make one of these starring a woman.
yeah, like as if that's like more insane.
Okay, so I have one more topic. Okay, so this is an interesting one. So we were talking this year, in 2014, about our most pleasant surprises, and this is the last clip I'm going to play for you.
Is this the one where
we're talking about our most pleasant surprise. Let me just play the clip.
Yeah,
okay. That's the setup. Oh, well, give me 1 second. You know. I'm a little rusty behind the podcast, Mike. I'm getting my clips.
Max is now running the editing booth. So that was a mistake.
Okay, here we go. Nope, that's the wrong clip. Okay, hold on. Here it is.
My number two choice.
Your number two choice for most pleasant surprise of the summer.
This is... Again, it's gonna sound kind of pretentious, and I don't know if you've seen this one, but I promise the next one is gonna be more fun. But this movie called The One I Love, which I just saw. It just came out on it's a pleasant surprise because it just popped, just came out on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
It's Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss,
mm-hmm.
And it's a science fiction film. But again,
so they're like robots. And
Again, it's kind of like Coherence or Transcendence, if you will. Transcendence once again.
Yeah. So that is interesting to me because this is the first year where we're talking about VOD movies, and like, there's like this novelty to like,
yeah,
there's just a movie, and it wasn't in theaters, and it's good, and it's by people I like, and I can just watch it whenever I want.
Just I like having no sense of like brushing aside VOD and its future, but spending lots of time on Transcendence is truly the future of where movies are heading.
So let me.
No, that is fascinating.
Let me play the next part of this clip. Hold on.
And I think the reason that I called it a pleasant surprise is because I actually went into it pretty like I was like, this sounds great, I'm sure it's gonna be great, and it was. I think what was surprising though was, it was just like I heard about it, and then like within 24 hours, I saw that it was on iTunes, and I was like, "This is great!" Like,
so there's a lot of VOD stuff, VOD, video on demand stuff this summer. I guess a lot of pleasant surprises that way. I also really liked They Came Together, which is the David Wayne directed, Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd,
mm-hmm.
kind of silly parody mm-hmm. of romantic comedies. And I haven't watched, but want to watch Coherence at your recommendation, which is also available just like on iTunes. And then there's Snowpiercer, which is a movie I had no idea existed or was coming out. It was like, hey, do you want to turn on your computer and watch an awesome sci-fi movie? So that summer, we're talking They Came Together. We're talking Coherence. We're talking whatever the name of that boring movie is I still haven't seen.
The One I Love.
The One I Love. And we're talking about...
you only had 10 years. Come on.
And we're talking Snowpiercer, which is a little different because it was like, I don't know what happened with Snowpiercer even to this day. It's like some sort of foreign co-production thing. It's kind of interesting. Like with Snowpiercer, we talk about how it's like from the director of The Host. Like we didn't know Bong yet, you know? And like,
he's the future Oscar.
And we're like, yeah, everyone's really smart. They must know The Host, you know? And like, we're just like, we only know him from The Host and like keep calling him the director of The Host, which is like.
Well, at the time, that's what he was. I mean, he had done some other stuff, but that's for Americans. That's kind of what he was known for.
Yeah, but now, he's broken through. And like, I know some of his older movies now. But it is this interesting moment where, like, all these movies came out, and I started thinking, well, what is the best movie that's debuted on streaming? And I wasn't really able to answer it because I can't find a list of just, like, movies that debuted on streaming. It's actually, I couldn't find anything good. But that initial set is pretty strong. I mean, Snowpiercer rocks. Snowpiercer is incredible. And
of course, oh my God.
So I started thinking, like, what is the best? I mean, one, another bong, Okja. I loved Okja. And
yes.
And then there's like also this class of like filmmakers who just can't make, like Hollywood doesn't want to release their movies in theaters anymore. So you're talking like Roma, you're talking like Irishman, like these like kind of like.
Which are also, they're released. I mean, it gets messy because like a lot of, I think Irishman, they had these deals where they were released theatrically. Right. I think sometimes the same day, but sometimes like, I think it's still about, every movie's different at this point, especially when it's like big name directors, like. Sometimes they're the same day. They have to have some theatrical window, except the last year because of the pandemic. They changed the rules, but they're changing back. But yeah. I don't know. That is a fun question, and it definitely is changing like all the time. But sometimes it is like one day in theaters, and then it's on streaming, which you probably basically means it comes out on streaming.
I think so. Another one that came to mind for me is...
But you're right, Roma and Irishman are capital G great movies, you know?
Another David Wayne one is, did you watch the National Lampoon biopic? I like that one a lot.
Oh, yeah, A Stupid and Futile Gesture?
Yes,
or
that's what it's called. Thank you, I didn't remember the title. That's another David Wayne movie that I liked a lot that went straight to streaming.
Netflix, yeah.
I was trying to think. The other thing that I think about with streaming is it's like kind of this where this middle class of movies live now, you know, like your Extractions, your Spencer Confidentials.
Yeah,
your,
I like Extraction ruled.
Your Night Comes for Us is, you know, like...
Yes, the mid-tier movie is like completely gone from theaters for the most part. And then like The One I Love, I guess it's not really a mid-tier movie. But I mean, I saw The Tomorrow War.
I haven't watched it yet.
I won't speak to the quality of the movie, but I'm not really getting into that. But
Tomorrow War was destined for theaters. I think the pandemic might have changed things. Like there is a world where that movie came out in theaters, I think.
I guess so. Yeah, you're probably, possibly, but I did notice it's an Amazon produced movie anyway.
Right.
I was shocked at the end. I stayed for the credits. It's not based on anything.
Oh, really?
Like, and the whole the premise of the movie screams like sci-fi novel.
Mm.
Like, we come back from the future to recruit our own people to fight a future war. But that's the kind. But that virtue, like, just original sci-fi. I mean, this is no Edge of Tomorrow, but you know, original sci-fi. That's another place for like that kind of stuff. Just like, you know, it's.
But sci-fi usually requires a budget. Like, there's a lot of like coherence.
But that's why it's so rarely original screenplays.
One I really remember being devastated by was Cloverfield 3. Do you remember that? Yeah. Like,
the Cloverfield Paradox.
There was like a Super Bowl commercial, and it was like, guess what? Cloverfield 3, it's online tonight. I don't watch the Super Bowl. I had just come back from California, so I was like jet lagged and up, and I was like, this is perfect. I'm like, there's a new Cloverfield movie. I'm going to watch a new Cloverfield movie right now. And that movie is terrible. That's one of the worst ones I've seen.
Right. It's a sort of a sequel kind of. I mean, it's a very unusual trilogy because they're sort of set in the same universe, but they're very different films.
Yeah, they're not really. I like the other two Cloverfields are awesome. That one is. I mean, I've kind of come honestly, like, streaming original movies, I assume, are bad unless it's like some prestige director is slumming it so he can like make the movie he wants to make, or she makes the movies he wants to make, like Roma or the Charlie Kaufman movie, for instance. Or if people are like, no, this, I mean, there's a few in the pandemic, like Mitchell's versus the Machines or Forever War that I think were supposed to come
Tomorrow
out in theaters.
War. Wait, the Tomorrow. Oh, the Forever War is a different thing, right?
Yeah. Forever War is maybe a book.
I don't know.
Anyway,
a lot of wars.
But if it's just like a movie on Netflix and it like looks decent, I've come to the point where I assume it's bad unless like informed otherwise.
I do think that's, I do think, going back to like the, I think what really stuck with me what you said is that mid-tier, not necessarily big budget, but like middle budget movie. I'm struggling to think of an example of this exact second, but like that's where you find some, I think, good ones on streaming, or just like rom-coms, or just like.
Right. There's no more romantic comedies in theaters, but like they still exist on Netflix.
And you can kind of go down. I mean, I think the thing I said in there about the one I love, just kind of stumbling across it on and pressing play. That can happen a lot more now. Like, what you, and also you get stuff recommended to you, and mm-hmm. like you kind of can go down these fun rabbit holes. So that's kind of a fun thing about what I think we kind of amusingly keep referring to as VOD. Yeah. I don't think anyone even call it VOD.
It's funny because I still don't know what to call it. Like a movie that's, I guess I'd say it's on streaming.
Streaming is kind, but yeah, but. Some people don't refer, if you have to pay for it individually, they don't call it streaming, but that's.
I think streaming is I can watch it for free if I have a subscription. It's like part of like some, it's already included in my plan.
Yeah.
VOD, I don't know if this is true. This is like how I interpret it. It's like you're right. It's like something you buy on iTunes or whatever. But it's funny that like that was 2014. Here we are 6 or 7 years later. Obviously the past year really accelerated this. These movies are like not going away. They're like a part of movie going culture now. And we still like don't really have a name for them, you know, like screenies or whatever, you know, like we don't know what to call it. So final prediction, Pat, do you have any predictions for the next 10 years of streaming?
Oh my God.
Do you think a movie that is primarily a streaming movie, they can give it a day or two? Oh, I thought of one more thing. I wanted to mention some of the comedies. Borat 2 is arguably up there for terms.
It's great.
Some people don't like it or whatever.
Greatest streaming movie ever.
Yeah, Bad Trip. I was thinking of like there's been a few good comedies that have come through.
Yeah, Borat's up there. Borat's that was great. I was surprised. Borat's got to age really weird, really, because it's so hyper specific to a very specific moment in time. I mean, the first Borat is 2, but I think less so weirdly. This one's like very much about Trump. Very much about like. The coronavirus, it's just like so, but that's kind of cool. That's kind of what was so exciting about it. But
so do you
it will
think,
kind of make it age in a unique way.
Right. I mean, I watched Borat 1 and it is also, it's not as specific to the moment, but it's also aged in a weird way. Do you think a streaming movie will win Best Picture? It's okay if they release it. Like if The Irishman counts as a streaming movie for my purposes, even though it like had this extremely limited theatrical release.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Especially if you allow for that kind of caveat of
it already almost happened. I feel like with Roma, Roma almost won, right?
So exactly. Yeah. Again, I think Roma had to be in theaters for like a couple of days just to qualify for. Yeah. The Academy has gone. They I think they loosened that rule for the pandemic because obviously everything was different. Movies were coming out in a different way last year. I think they've reinstituted the rule. I don't know whether it's like it has to be in theaters first or just has to be in theaters at all. But either way, if you're allowing for that, whatever their rule is, as long as like you just mean like a Netflix original film.
Yeah.
Whether it's also in theaters not. Absolutely. Definitely.
Definitely. So give me a more interesting question to ask you then. Like,
oh, sorry.
No, I don't know.
I'll just elaborate.
It's funny, with the Marvel prediction, I had like four things. I'm like, is there going to be a bomb? Will someone else play Iron Man with this? I don't know.
They're just doing so many high profile films that it just seems like a matter of time. Like The Irishman, whether, like, I'm not sure if it's come out yet, or it might be like 5 years or 10 years, but it just seems like every year there's more and more, I think it seems like every year there's like a new streaming service gets to the Oscars. Like,
yeah.
So you just it just seems like eventually it has to happen. That said though, the Academy can be very stodgy and very old. I mean, you know, they gave Green Book Best Picture or whatever. So like there could be like a sort of rebellion or there's apparently a lot of the Academy voters are older and they just don't watch streaming services as actively as we do, which sounds kind of a little difficult to believe considering how big of a part of our lives it is. So that's one barricade to it winning an Oscar. The other is maybe just a little like, you know, snobbishness from the
Academy.
There's
like a politics thing too in Hollywood. Like,
yeah.
Right.
But yes, politics of Hollywood.
Do you think streaming will continue to eat movies in the way that it's like eaten the romantic comedy genre? It's not streaming's fault. Like, these movies have fallen out of theaters, and I guess streaming's kind of picking up what's falling off, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think that'll continue?
I do. I just don't see it. I don't see it going. I mean, I don't see the momentum of it changing. It's just like, why would it? You know what I mean? Like, unless I think now that theaters are back, maybe it'll slow. Because I do think, I mean, I saw Fast 9 in theaters, fully vaccinated. You know, it was my first like big movie return sort of thing of that scale. And I think they were only at like 50% capacity, but it was like that full 50%. I'm sure if they had upped it to 75, there would have been people like willing to go. So like, I think people are hungry to go back. I think theaters will come back. I just feel like people really like going to them. But I don't think the streamers are going to slow in any way.
How fucking crazy is it going to be when we listen to this in 10 years and like, so many of our opinions are based on this pandemic. Like, listening to this in 10 years and, like, how many things, like, we're just gonna be like, oh, yeah, remember when, like, movie theaters were closed for a year and a half? That was, like, a weird...
I'll say it now because I didn't want to, like, neg your entire conceit at the beginning of the thing, but after the last 10 years, I truly feel like we're tempting fate by trying to predict what our lives are going to be like in 10... What our movie lives are going to be like in 10 years. Because, like, I truly have no idea. Like, I'm not even talking about movies anymore. I'm just saying, like, in the world. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, like... I'm being somewhat facetious, but only somewhat.
Well, one thing I know for sure is I'm reasonably confident anyway. Maybe I shouldn't say for sure. But I'm reasonably confident that in 2021, we can record another one of these if you're still down. And hopefully we'll do 10 more in between now and then.
We can talk about F19.
Do you think they'll keep making F19? Do you think they'll keep going with Fast and the Furiouses?
Well, they're doing two more. I think two more are confirmed. Or like one more, but a two-parter. Sort of Harry Potter style.
Oh my God.
Which is funny. Because it's not like based on a book series. So like there's no reason to split. I guess you don't have to split up the last one into
there's
two parts.
There's just too much story to tell.
Yeah, it's like, well, no, you just call it 10 and 11. But I think they probably just want to end. I did hear maybe... I don't know, because someone had told me they're going to wrap it up after this two-parter, F10, because the title series wasn't confusing enough. We're going to have F10-1 and F10-2. But then I've also heard he keeps saying, like, I want to do a... Vin Diesel said he's open to doing a musical, and someone said he's open to do... Someone involved creatively is also open to doing a Fast and Furious Jurassic World crossover.
I've heard that, too. Never gonna, even if Vin drops out, I can they'll do more Hobbs and Shaws. There'll be like a Ludacris and Tyrese movie or whatever. And, you know, like the things will keep going. But,
oh, and I meant to bring up Hobbs and Shaw earlier because when we were talking about why The Rock kind of works best when he's like got someone to play off of. And like, that's why, I mean, they literally gave him that Hobbs and Shaw is almost completely based on that. The fact that, you know, the expectation that he would just like be electric with Shaw,
yeah,
you know, which like the, see like every scene of that movie.
Can I say, and I'm going to spoil the, we're done here, so Hobbs you can turn it off, but I'm going to spoil the post-credit scene of Fast 9. Did you see there's a post-credit scene? It's like, this movie makes no fucking sense. It's like Han shows up at what's his name? Shaw's, right? Yeah. Han shows up at Shaw's and he's like ostensibly mad because Shaw tried to kill him. But like, why didn't he do anything about it years ago? Like, what is the whole Han thing makes no sense, right?
Because he was in hiding, dude.
But now he's not in hiding anymore?
Yeah, because he was in hiding with that. He was in hiding with the girl who had like the, who had the, what's it called? What was the MacGuffin called? Like the
Aegis, maybe.
Ah, it was something that, like the Argus or something. Whatever. Who had the important code that activated the satellite thing in her DNA?
So like during Tokyo,
he was in hiding though. I think is the short answer. Is my guess.
But like during Tokyo Educated Drift, guess. Like while he's working with that kid on teaching him to drift, like while he's being Mr. Miyagi in Tokyo Drift. It's like, the kid's like, cool, thanks for the lesson. He's like, see you later, great. And then he like goes and this happened concurrently. Like, during Tokyo Drift, he was like also doing spy stuff that we just like previously didn't know about. Like,
yeah,
when the kid was like doing his high school business.
Or before it. Yes, yes.
It's so funny. I would love to revisit Tokyo Drift with like the knowledge that like, this guy is a super spy and this is the least important shit in the world to him. This is just like such a side project of this man's life right now.
So I recently watched Tokyo Drift with some friends to prepare for this movie, and it's not that complicated, but for some reason my brain won't let me, like, I feel like I understand like Interstellar better than I understand this movie, this timeline situation, even though it's not that bad. The other cool thing about Tokyo Drift that I, having watched it for the first time just before the new one, is that Sonny Chiba is like the kind of the gang boss in it. He's like kind of the big bad. Yeah. There's like a younger true big bad who actually fights the people and stuff and races them, but he's like the kind of senior old big bad. I'm like, why don't they push that more? That's like the coolest thing in the world.
And were the guys with the rocket engines in the new one, they are from Tokyo Drift, right?
I think, well, Bow Wow and the white kid are. Uh-huh. I do not know the third one. The third's kind of skinny one.
Yeah.
I think he might not be, because I feel like there's a scene at the very end, spoiler, of F9 when they're having their, you know, cookout at the house like they always do. And I think there's sort of a handshake that feels a little more, like he hugs everyone, but he shakes that guy's hand. So that's like they just met. Because listen, if you're in the F9 family, you get a hug.
Yeah. Well, Pat, thank you for doing 10 fucking years of these. And I went through the archives. These are not the only episodes of the show you've done. You must have done 15 or 20 of these of the 250.
10 years, and you have a baby.
Yeah.
I would say we're old, except see every movie we just talked about.
I know.
we're a bunch of 11-year-olds.
It's funny, like, in the 2011 one, when I'm talking about Pixar, you're talking about, like, how my room is like a child's room, and, like, how I have all this stuff.
That's not going to change.
No, this is the child's room we're recording in now.
It's
this
a
is
literal
not my,
child's
this
room
This is
now.
Not my room anymore.
Oh, okay, it's a child's room. That explains why it's filled with board games.
Well, we're not done unpacking yet.
Those are your board games. Yeah. That's not a joke. We're in Jeff's future nursery.
Yeah.
But it's filled with his board games.
Well, we're unpacking still.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
He doesn't need the room. So, Pat, thank you again. You just committed to doing 10 more years of this, so thank you for that.
Well, my pleasure. Yeah, I'm excited. And you know, after this unfortunate last year, I'm excited for, well, hopefully it'll be a more, knock on wood, more traditional timeline. We'll be able to go to the movies again. I'm already doing it.
Yeah, let's go. We'll go see something.
Transcendence 2.
What's coming out that we could see? Yeah, the other thing I haven't seen yet that I have to see is Josh Rubin's Werewolves Within.
I have seen that.
Let's plug Werewolves Within before we leave. I can't wait to see Werewolves Within. It's so exciting.
It's in theaters. I think it's on streaming too. I thought it was just in theaters, but it's
I think you can rent it now, so I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, really, that was really fun.
I'm going to watch that before I watch Luca. You hear me, Josh? I'm watching this before I watch the new Pixar movie. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I can't wait. Okay, well, Pat, thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.